This is going to create the kind of form following function that should have been done a long time ago, in my opinion. It's also going to create three types of family prosperity endeavors that I think are really important moving forward. We have work systems that is responsible for skills training, that is responsible for getting people educated for jobs. We're going to have the Portland Development Commission focused on business assistance and development like never before. And we're going to have a housing agency, the third leg of the stool, as you talk about accurately, that is going to be focused on delivering on the housing agenda in partnership with the jobs organization and with the business assistance and development organization. So that work will continue. I think it'll happen more functionally. I think it will happen more effectively. This is fundamentally about improving effectiveness. And it's easy to sort of in this environment where we're cutting budgets across the board and the economic crisis that we're in to sort of think about this. And you've said a number of times, efficiency. Clearly, we want to be efficient, but this is fundamentally about effectiveness.
Let me just, I want to assure all the commissioners that this is not a resistance to change. This union is one of the leading advocates and change agents in the city. But when we make change, we want to make sure it's done the right way. And that's what we're saying to you is like, slow down, include the employees that actually do the work. We are all about making the right changes in the city. I've been to all of you any number of times about big projects that we want to be involved with you. And for us, I believe for you too, the key ingredient is making the changes with all of us as partners and getting the wisdom of the employees that do the work.
And that really is true, and I want to commend you for that.
And I want to say to Ken and John and Carl, and I want to say to the people that are here with you, some of the things you said today about a more meaningful dialogue, a deeper collaboration, I get that. And again, I'm the top of the food chain on the housing side. And if we're not doing it as well as we should, I take responsibility for that. I don't delegate that. So that's something we're going to talk about.
I appreciate that.
Number two, I've also heard some things today that, frankly, are news to me. And that may be because I am so overwhelmed with the other triage we're doing, or I've reached, at age 50, a state of such mental infirmity. But I'm going to follow up with you on those points, too, because you've touched on some other things, which I don't think are really appropriate to have a dialogue in this setting. I want to sit down with staff representatives and leadership, and I want to have that conversation. And what I think the other people here need to know is that when we do have those conversations, those are robust conversations. They're respectful but robust. People are not inhibited in meetings with me telling me whether they think I'm doing the right thing or the wrong thing. And I hope in the 7 months that I've held this job and in the remaining year before the voters release me from this job, I hope that I have established to everyone's satisfaction the humility of trying to do it better. And if there's something that I can learn from this experience, you have my commitment, because I think if we get this right, and I'm convinced we will get this right, I believe this will be a plus for everyone involved. And I would not be leading that effort with the mayor and taking good people down that path if I couldn't look you in the eye and say, at the end of the day, I think we're going to be in a better place.
Thank you, Mr. Fish. And I just want to say that I think the other core team members will say this is not the first time I've said this. So this is not, I'll leave it at that.
Thank you all very much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Appreciated the dialogue. Are there other people signed up?
No one else signed up for
292. Anyone else that wishes to testify on this matter? Is there any additional council conversation on this matter desired? All right, Carla, will you please call the roll?
Fritz? Well, I do have some more questions, but they can be answered as we continue to move on, because I think one of the big questions is the cost for the move and how we're going to pay for that in a budget where there's $6.5 million of asks from the Housing Bureau and not that much money in the one-time costs available to us. So again, I'm wondering about the timing of and looking at possible alternate ways to address some of the monetary issues. I mean, the bottom line is we do all care about providing services to citizens who need housing. And so I know Commissioner Fish will continue to hold that dear, and all the employees do too. So that's a shared concern as to how much is this going to cost and how can we accomplish it. There's only good intentions in all the work that's being done right now. And the union letter I thought was very helpful to me personally. And when I got to the end of the union letter, I saw that it was signed by the PDC union employees, and I thought this is one of the advantages of unionizing, that we can speak as one voice and that people don't have to put their personal names on the line. And then I turned the page and I saw page after page of signatures of PDC employees who were willing to put their names on the line, and I really respect that. It shows that people care and that they, each of you in PDC, is doing a good job and is willing to put your name there to say that you're willing to continue working on that. I'm constantly amazed by all the organizations and the people who work together, both within the city, within PDC, at the Housing Authority of Portland. Yesterday in my office, we had many of the several leaders of our community partners who provide both shelter and permanent supportive housing. And nobody had anything but good things to say about both the Bureau of Housing and Community Development and the Portland Development Commission. So we have to be careful as we move forward on this to recognize that the PDC of 2009 is not the PDC of years past, and that significant progress has been made and continues to be made in making sure that we do focus on our core issues and on providing services to citizens. So in the past, it has been somewhat fashionable. A political advisor told me when I first ran for office 3 years ago that you're always safe to bash the PDC because that's a popular thing to do and nobody's going to contradict you in public. And I refuse to do that because... I will now. Yes, I hope that a lot of people will now contradict that we have a new spirit of understanding both within each of our organizations and between our organizations, and we want to continue to do that. In looking to create the Office of Healthy Working Rivers, we've been looking at some of the same challenges on a much smaller basis and looking to how could we do an alternative service model that would not move quite so fast, perhaps, or as with whole integration, but can we do it with oversight of a commissioner? And so there's some other options that I know Commissioner Fish is aware of and looking into. And there are also inherent problems with this reorganization, especially at the time when the budgets are being short and jobs are being lost. And there may be efficiencies gained in both the short and long run. I certainly appreciated Commissioner Fish's statement at the beginning that this was not intended to save money. It's intended to do things better. I also think back to our budget session earlier this week with showing the decline in tax increment financing money and knowing that this new bureau is going to have revenues rapidly dropping off as the districts come to a close. And what are we going to do about that? I know that that's on Commissioner Fish's list of challenges to address, and I know that the workers in PDC, both who will remain in PDC and those who will come over, are aware of that challenge. So there's a lot more work to do, and this report helps us along the way, and so did our testimony today. Aye.
Fish?
Well, first, I want to thank the mayor for the leadership that he demonstrated in making this one of his priority government reorganization projects. There's so much capital that you acquire when you come into a position, and you have to be judicious in how you draw down that capital. And there are sometimes easier routes that can be chosen. This is not an easy route. And so I want to thank the mayor for his stalwart support. And again, as I said earlier, if this was such an easy thing to do, it would have been done sometime over the last 15 years when it has been talked over a period of time which has been talked to death. But it's happening because of some leadership. And what we learned today in our discussion is first and foremost that we have a healthy and robust democracy where even our partners can come forward and express their misgivings and be treated with respect, and that we can have a dialogue. And I'm old school. I sometimes think you don't need a letter to prompt that. I think you do it over a cup of coffee, but it doesn't matter how it's done. It's about communicating. And this is the process of bargaining. It's the back and forth that goes on repeatedly. And the essence of trust is not a declaration. The essence of trust is a show me. And trust is earned. It isn't granted. You earn it through your deeds. So anything I can say here will pale in comparison to how we will be judged through how we follow through on the commitments we've made. The council directed that this merger go forward and gave us 45 days to come back with a report. I did not think within 45 days this team, which I happen to think very highly of, that was assembled, could possibly come up with this report, but they did. And it is the blueprint for how we go forward. It was not intended to answer every question, and it was not intended to be a dissertation. It was meant to be the outline, the blueprint for how we're going to proceed. And as we heard today, there are concerns about different aspects of this, and that includes concerns about good communication. We take that to heart, and we're going to act on that. But we have fulfilled the mandate of this council to come back with a report. And I wish we had a long period of time to do this. Sort of how I feel when I come to work every morning, Commissioner Fritz. I seem to have more things than I can get done, and I have to do I sort of pick who am I going to get on the wrong side of that day because I just can't get to it all. And the folks who are actually doing the work at PDC and BHCD are being asked to work in extraordinary circumstances. And I think we just ought to step back for a moment and say that what triggered this, the worst economic collapse of my lifetime, was a housing collapse. It wasn't, with all due respect, a collapse of transportation resources. It wasn't a collapse that occurred in other areas. It was a housing collapse. And so those of us committed to this great enterprise of building housing for people are in the middle, in the engine room, of the worst economic collapse of our lifetime. So on top of all the challenges of our work, we're at the heart of the collapse of our global economy. That's a wonderful dynamic. And at the same time, we're being asked to envision a new bureau. I don't underestimate how challenging this will be. I think of it as the most challenging thing I've ever taken on. But as we've worked through what I consider the first or second inning of this process, through my own conversations with people, what I've observed, and the reports that I've gotten back, I am more and more confident that we're going to do this the right way. And as I said earlier, what I'm most excited about is bringing all these talented people together under one roof and meeting the charge of this new bureau. I had a chance earlier to thank all the participants. I'll just thank them again en masse for all their hard work. And I'd love to be able to say that the hard work is over and now comes the fun part, but the hard work in phase one is over and now the hard work of phase two begins. And if there are lessons to be learned about how we can do this in a more effective, collaborative way with better communication, I am one commissioner who is proud to publicly announce that I don't have all the answers and have not figured out how to do everything at the highest level. And so I will continue to learn with my partners in this. But I do believe that the cause that we are jointly working toward of having a unified housing system in our city is one of the great causes of our day. And I think at some point we'll look back and say, this was a watershed event for Portland. I'm proud to vote aye.
Leonard?
What rang true to me in the concerns that I heard were the concerns about representation and the concerns about making sure that people who are represented now continue to be represented. As the person who brought forward to the council some time back a resolution supporting the efforts of the PDC people, PDC employees to organize, I very much believe in the right to people to organize. Sometimes people, though, have confused that to mean that I will carte blanche agree with then the new represented employees' stated concerns. And as I've said in many forums, because you don't agree doesn't mean you're not listening. It would be unfair to say, well, you're not listening to me if I don't agree. I can't even say that in this case because it sounds like Commissioner Fish hasn't been afforded the opportunity to hear what some of the concerns are. So we can't even get to the point where we can say you had a forum and you stated your case. So there's a disagreement, not an unwillingness to listen. But beyond that, I suppose I depart with one of my colleagues a little bit. in one respect, in that I have complete faith, particularly after listening to Commissioner Fish's vision for the consolidated housing bureau, and understanding his real focus on making sure things at the city are done effectively and efficiently and equitably, that the package that he's working on is being done in a timely fashion, will be done in a way that respects our budget constraints, and will be done in a way that respects the rights of the employees. I instinctively know that, and I inherently entrust Nick to bring a package back that does that. That probably doesn't bring comfort to those of you that don't know him as well as I do, but I hope that my past behavior in with respect to working class issues and more particularly union issues gives you some level of comfort that I have comfort in his judgment and his innate fairness. This is a very, very difficult thing to do, even if there aren't wage, hours, or working condition issues, even if there aren't issues that affect whether or not people are unionized. It is a very disrupting thing to happen in a person's life. I don't think it's a stretch to say it's not unlike having a loss in your family. We go to work and we expect to arrive at the same time. We expect to work a certain amount of hours and to have lunch generally at the place that we like to go to. We like to get home at the same time. We like to watch the news hour. We like to watch Dancing with the Stars, and we like to watch. And when that gets I will tell you that in my own life, when that gets disrupted, I get thrown off. And the older I get, the more it affects me. 5 years ago, we moved to a different house, and it took me 6 months to just personally settle down and be able to be back to a rhythm, just simply because I moved houses, whereas years ago, it didn't affect me. So to somehow think, and for anybody here listening to dismiss the impact that kind of a change that we're discussing has on you personally, has to be recognized and addressed. I mean, it has to be discussed. And those of you that are concerned have to be open to hearing that as well, open to hearing that could be one of the issues at play here. But in the end, I think what we're going to have is a very, very powerful and effective and focused housing bureau that is going to coordinate and be even more effective than what it has been, and it's a component parts up until now. So I very much appreciate hearing the concerns, but I encourage those that have concerns to take Commissioner Fish up on his offer and start off with saying, well, be careful what you ask for, Commissioner Fish, because here I am, and here are my list of concerns. And then if you have a problem after that, I will be more than interested to hearing what that is. So thank you, Commissioner Fish, and everybody that's worked on this to this point. Aye.
Adams?
Well, just to, I realize that maybe in hindsight on my open remarks that there might be folks in the room that sort of haven't benefited from the full background on why the council is undertaking five major structural changes within the city of Portland to improve effectiveness. In this particular area, just in the shortest form possible, you know, having been a student of, a participant in, or observer of PDC and the city's housing efforts for 11 years as a chief of staff to the commissioner in charge of PDC, and for 4 years as a member of the city council, as a commissioner, now as mayor, I've had the opportunity of just personal experience and to see the opportunity costs of the way that the current system is arrayed. But more than just my simple observations or experience, over the years there have been audit findings that starting years ago, that called for more coordination or more consolidation than we were seeking to achieve here. Most recently, that was called for yet again in the Clegg study, for which I don't agree with all the calls for more and or additional consolidation, but I think that the documentation of the systematic dysfunction that has occurred is well made. It has been made over many, many years, and that smaller, more modest fixes and changes have been tried with what I consider to be less than adequate results. This is difficult, thankless work. And I want to underscore my thanks to Commissioner Fish and his team for taking on this task. He's been very generous in recognizing me in this effort, which I appreciate it. But the frontline work is done by you and your team. And part of the reason that I thought, because the need has been there for a long time for a change, but part of the reason why I felt comfortable calling for change and on an aggressive timeline was because Commissioner Fish's leadership abilities and his experience in this field, both inside the system as a HAP commissioner, but also outside this system in his work on a number of different endeavors. So I want to thank you for your willingness to do that. No effort of this complexity ever goes as smoothly as anyone wants. But I am impressed by the fact that Commissioner Fish has been so open and candid and willing to recognize the concerns that you put on the table, embrace them, and commit himself to addressing them in a manner that's really lacks any sort of defensive posture. So I think I want to thank you for that as well. Hearing the words of Commissioner Leonard in terms of, might be difficult, but I think are also wise. Change is difficult, and we don't always know how change impacts our perceptions. In this particular case, I hope that we can get to the point in our future collaboration on this issue with employees that we're talking about how to create a system that uses your full talents. And in a manner that really improves your professional quality of life. That's my hope. I think it's possible. I know many of you personally. I know how good you are, and I want a system to deliver housing that is every bit as good as you are individually. Thank you. Aye. Council item is approved. Could you please read the title for Council Item 292?
Accept report to City Council on Bureau of Planning and Sustainability.
You are an angel. Did you wait? You don't have to wait.
No, I was in this game. Oh, okay. And I have to leave at 3:45. Is there any problem? Just a big mark.
Good afternoon.
This Good afternoon.
Will be somewhat briefer, I hope.
Go ahead.
Susan Anderson, Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and with me here is Chief Planner Joe Zender. In late December, the mayor announced he would merge the Office of Sustainable Development with the Bureau of Planning, and as you know, the Planning Bureau has a long, long history and is nationally and internationally known for guiding the city's growth and development to become a thriving, livable city. In contrast, OSD, the Office of Sustainable Development, which was established by Commissioner Saltzman, is a newer organization, and it's known for its creative policies, quick action, and its creative sort of technical solutions to promote sustainable development throughout the city. We've found that the merger so far has created a new organization that is very much a planning and a doing organization. Already the change is happening. Staff have found many, many ways to work together, to use each other's resources, to use each other's skills, to use and build on each other's missions. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about what's been going on. The report in front of you covers much of the progress and the key issues, how the new bureau is organized, how we are integrating staff and learning from each other's styles and cultures. In terms of co-location, I think it's going to be a while until we're under one roof. However, in April, we will shift a small group from the EcoTrust building over to the 1900 building. Unfortunately, due to the budget situation, we may have as many as 20 people laid off from planning, which means there will be more room in the 1900 building. I realize that's the budget discussion and not a topic for today, but it's very real, and it could be as many as 20 employees affected by that. In the meantime, the new bureau has been extremely productive. I'm going to give you a few examples of what's going on. First is the Climate Action Plan. The plan will be released for comment in April. It's very science-based. It's not just aspirational. It draws a map of exactly what is needed to get Portland to an 80% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. The plan is a really good example of how the city's planning and sustainability agendas really overlap, how they enhance each other as we continue to shift away from a fossil fuel economy and focus on fundamental changes in our urban form, in transportation, in buildings, and in consumption. Many other things have been going on over the past few months. I won't go through, you know, the 50 different projects that have been moving on successfully. Staff has been amazing in terms of, under Joe's leadership, the planning staff, and under Michael Armstrong's leadership, the sustainability staff, in that they've been able to continue to get their work done and at the same time begin to grow and actually enhance the work that they're doing by using each other's skills and each other's abilities. We've had some fabulous fix-it fairs. We've had the East Portland Action Plan over the past couple months. We've gotten a new grant for $500,000 focused on cleaning up transportation diesel engines. We have very promising action on attracting stimulus dollars, up to about $4 million on energy efficiency, and that will be leveraged with our new Clean Energy Fund, which I'm going to be coming around to talk to all of you about in the next couple weeks. We've been working very closely with Mayor Adams to redesign the Portland Plan, the Central City Plan, and the Comprehensive Plan process, and have a substantial new focus on eco-districts. The city's work on eco-districts is another great example of merging together planning and sustainability. The idea of an eco-district is that it is a public and private strategy to focus and leverage investment in a way that focuses it on certain parts of the city and looks at affordable housing, green building, energy and water efficiency, stormwater, looking at energy systems, opportunities to walk and to bike, and putting those things together in one area. OSD and the Planning Bureau, for the past several months, and actually for the past year, have been working together on this issue, but being together in one office makes a difference. It makes us more efficient. It makes us and allows us to put our work plans together and enables us to actually dig deeper. So there's a lot going on. I want you to know that personally I'm thrilled by this opportunity. It's a great opportunity in terms of being able to bring new skills together. You know, I've had calls over the past 2 months from colleagues in other cities who are all very excited and are thinking, what a great idea to put planning and sustainability together. They're also...
It's really like peanut butter and chocolate, isn't it? Yeah. You don't know how good it is until you put them together.
We've bumped into each other a lot lately, yeah. So...
I would compare that to peanut butter and mayonnaise, but it's your own taste.
The amazing
that's
thing...
That's you're making my point. You've not tried it. Then you just try it, and you'll love it.
So the amazing thing about these calls is that they're actually calling to complain because they're saying that it took them 5 or 6 years to finally convince their city councils that they needed an OSD, and now we've hearing gone raised the bar again and made it something new that they have to aspire to. So the merger's happened. It's going well. I think we've had a great it's been amazing how easy and smooth and collaborative staff have been. Compared to the budget issues we're dealing with, the merger is gone smoothly, and so I look forward to continuing the discussion on funding as we move forward. Thank you.
Just one thing, well, a couple of things. One, I want to thank you, Susan, and Joe, and Michael, and the entire leadership team, and all the employees in both bureaus. I had an opportunity to attend a staff gathering of the group, and it's a real good, lively, can-do spirit, and the meshing has really got people excited, and that's good to see. So thank you. I wanted you to just talk about some of the conversations that we've had privately about Planning Commission and the Sustainability Commission and our thinking to keep those separate. For the time being, and both provide very important functions. We share the Sustainability Commission with the county. So you want to talk a little bit more about that?
I think currently Planning Commission has a very, very full agenda, and so does the Sustainable Development Commission. And the commission, the Sustainability Commission, has been focused both with the county and the city, and is really the county's only voice in terms of citizen advice directly to the county. It together, I think, in the long run, there may be a great opportunity to put these things together. But right now, the Planning Commission does so much day-to-day work and depth into issues that many of the things that the sustainability group has been working on that are very quick action-oriented, getting letters about the CRC, taking action related to various topics, it's a much more nimble group, I'd say. So we're having meetings. They're going to have a joint retreat, hopefully, in the next couple months. We're meeting basically for 3 or 4 hours where they discuss how can we build on each other's, have some joint meetings over the year. And I'd say within the year we'll come back with some kind of recommendation about do we continue keeping them separate or do we merge them together.
Has the Planning Commission had input into this reorganization and the planning functions work program?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, at this point, we haven't had a retreat sort of internal, the new bureau, because we don't want to do a strategic plan until we know what the budget is. We're literally going from $11 million to $7 million in general fund, and that has a huge consequence. And I want to make sure we know what the numbers are before we start trying to make decisions about what are going to be our priorities and which things. You know, I think during the budget process, unfortunately, we're going to have to do triage and make those choices. We've had conversations with Don Hansen and the other planning members, both individually that I've had and as a group, about, you know, what's important to you.
Good.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments? Thank you. Has anyone signed up?
No one signed up.
Commissioner Fritz.
Quick questions. The report said that some of the sustainability staff would be moving into the Portland, into the 1900 building.
Right.
Are there others who will be somewhere else?
You mean moving over later?
Yeah. Is there a remnant of sustainability staff that won't be moving?
Oh, yeah. There are about 49 people in the EcoTrust building. We're going to move over maybe five right now at the communications team because I want them right with me in the 1900 building. I'm in the 1900 building 4 days a week, probably. And, you know, over time, we're looking for an opportunity to cut rent costs in the EcoTrust building, to be honest, and move some of the staff over. There's some real value to having us in the EcoTrust building, but in the long run, having us in one place is important. The Oregon Sustainability Center that PSU and other partners, nonprofits and others, are trying to have built over the next couple of years seems like a great home for us in the long run, but that's 2 or 3 years from now.
So that's really different from what Commissioner Fish is. We just had the discussion with Housing and PDC and wanting
right.
to get them together fast. What are the downsides to leaving most of sustainability in a different place?
I don't have to work out anymore. I'm running back and forth. You know, there are some downsides. The one thing that may be a little different, and I'm not sure, is that more than half of the sustainability staff isn't in the office that much. They're out. They're out working with business. They're out working with residents all the time. And so in some ways, we're used to working by phone, by, you know, text, by not actually always being in the same office. So that's helped a little. Of course, if we were in one place, it would make my job easier in building a new culture, you know, and helping employees feel like they're really one. My guess is what we're going to do is mix it up over time, you know, because I don't have the money to put everybody together.
Yeah, and this is an easier merger than what Commissioner Fish is trying to accomplish.
Oh, I'm not so sure.
Well, it's actually what the choice is not to merge, because to save money.
Oh, in deference to the time, I'm not going to raise some of the objections that my staff has put together here. I will put this in the record, and I want my objections noted.
So I just have one more question.
Citizens waiting to testify here.
We do? Okay, sorry. Well, then I'll just go to the draft title 3.33 code language,
right.
Which I find we don't currently have code language. It's
right.
What the Bureau of Planning does. What's going to be the citizen input into refining that draft language on what the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability will do?
At this point, we haven't had much. We've I believe both the Planning Commission and Sustainable Development Commission have seen it, but it's very, we took it as a routine thing. Until we set a new goal and until we define a new mission, I'd really rather wait and do that once we define what that really is rather than mess with the code right now. So at this point, it's sort of a merged mission, which is perhaps not the final.
Perhaps we could talk about that another time. Thank you.
It's good questions. Any other council discussion? All right. Anybody signed up to testify?
No one else signed up.
Okay. Thank you very much. Unless there's additional discussion, Carla, would you please call the roll on item number 292?
Fritz?
Well, my concern, there are also a lot of issues contained with this, and it's very interesting to hear the different approach of remaining somewhat separate. But still, the projected cost of the Portland plan is $2.5 million, and we have $1.7 million that's only one-time funded, so there's only $0.8 million. There's a big gap, is what I think. So I will be looking forward to that budget discussion and then discussion with the community as to what's feasible to get done in the Portland plan, notwithstanding your excellent staff, those who remain, and also the commissioner in charge, going to do a great job. Aye.
Fish.
Well, I want to say it's been a pleasure to get to know Susan and have a chance to work with her, and I am excited about collaborating on the next phase of the update of the Portland plan. And since I have an interest in obviously the housing component, the open space and parks component, the ball fields, the community gardens, and a few other things, I look forward to working very closely with you as we embark on that exercise. And as I was sitting here watching you testify and listening to the public cry and hue in opposition to what you're doing, I was frankly
jealous,
feeling a little jealous. So maybe I'll get a consultation from you later on how you've done this so smoothly. Aye.
Leonard?
It's not a fair comparison.
Well, it probably isn't a fair comparison. Those of us who have worked with Susan when she was director of sustainability quickly found it to be a place that gets things done. And I remember a couple of years back we had some money to give out for a special project, and we gave the PDC an opportunity to make a presentation, and Susan and the off sustainability, and to the shock of the PDC and everybody watching, we gave it to Susan because she actually came back with an 8-page work plan that that was spot on. And so I'm not surprised that the merger is going as well as it is, and really appreciate all the work that's being done, and know that you're going to really revitalize planning as well.
Sorry.
Aye. I know when to quit now. Okay. I'm getting
like
it from Amanda.
It's like the music playing at the Academy Awards.
Yeah. I'm getting it from both sides.
Carla had heard enough from you, Commissioner.
Like, right.
Carla, we are just as frustrated as you are with his constant grandstanding and filibusters. And I did.
I have never heard you do that before.
I don't know.
Oh, you just tickled me pink. Tickled me pink.
I'm sorry. It won't happen again.
Did you end up voting?
I can't remember. I'm so flustered. I don't know what to do.
Okay. So, thanks again, Susan and Joe and Michael, the whole team. It's a pleasure to work with you. I also want to acknowledge Emerald Bogue, Megan Ponder, Lisa Libby, and Amy Ruiz on the planning and sustainability team in the mayor's office for doing such a great job as well to help through all the changes and all the work product that's underway. Aye. 292 is approved. Could you please read the title for council item 293?
Yes. Adopt the Selwood Bridge Project Locally Preferred Alternative and Project Conditions.
Would somebody please step forward?
We're coming.
Well, this is another final tune presentation.
Okay. I somehow lost the crib notes here, what I'm supposed to do. So regarding the Selwood Bridge, of which you and I have served as a representative on this process, which has been a really excellent process. And I'm going to let you give the overview, and then I think we have some honored guests to hear from as well.
We do. I'm Susan Keel, Director of Transportation. And as Mayor Adams said, I had the pleasure of serving on the Senior Staff Advisory Committee for this project. And I want to tell you that it's not often that you can have hundreds of people turn out for public meetings on something and very civilly talk about the differences and folks' interests on this. I went to a number of the evening meetings, just dropped in unannounced with no particular role, and saw this happening over and over again. And I think what that is testimonial to the way that the county conducted this process and the very broad involvement from all of the jurisdictions that have any relationship to this project. This really required active participation from the different counties and cities that touch on this project. And the elements of the locally preferred option were those that both the Citizens Committee, and there was a Citizens Committee that was in charge, really the overall body on this, and our internal staff committee and the policy advisory group all came to the same place. So that's pretty darn nice, I think, when you can do that. We also worked with our partner bureaus within the city and other agencies to deal with the natural resource issues, and also with the Planning Commission. Went to the Planning Commission on this, and they concurred with the recommendations here. So we have come with an LPA decision that we think is supported by the community, is supported by the elected members of the Policy Advisory Group, by the Senior Staff Advisory Committee, and that's a pretty nice place to be. So I want to turn it over to Mauricio Leclerc, who's going to go through the technical side of this, but you should know that this has been an exceedingly thorough process. And Ian Cannon is here, and John Gillum as well from our staff, in case you have any questions.
Thank you, Mauricio Leclerc, PBAT Transportation Planning. We're about to get ready with be able to open up a PowerPoint presentation, but I would just say that where we have before you is Exhibit A, which is actually the locally preferred alternative, as well as Exhibit B, which is a list of project conditions, things that the city would like to have examined as this project moves forward. Excuse me, I think I can. As Sue mentioned, we have Ian Cannon, Bridge Services Manager from Multnomah County. He was also part of the senior agency staff. And John Gillum, Transportation Planning Section Manager, as well as Commissioner Deborah Cafuri. So if I can just go ahead and have a PowerPoint, which basically will... Sure. And we have this... We're distributed... distributing... A map, which basically shows the locally preferred alternative, as well as the PowerPoint presentation. And ready? So this is 2 years worth of work as part of an environmental studies, part of the following the rules of the National Environmental Policy Act. And 2 years in about 10 minutes, so bear with me. Here's the Selwood Bridge, located about 2 miles south of downtown Portland. Is the only bridge between Oregon City and downtown Portland. As such, it has several constraints. One is that it's very heavily used, as well as has geological constraints. And it's a bridge that on one end, on the eastern end, meets Main Street, Tacoma Main Street. And on the west side, it meets Highway 43. So the needs of the project evolved to meet the needs of on the east end, maintain the livability of Tacoma, and on the west end meets the mobility needs of Highway 43. In terms of physical constraints, the bridge is located in an area that it has unstable soil, especially in the west. There has been a slope slide that occurred in the 60s. The bridge had to be cut at one point and put together again, and it's been sliding on the west side ever since. I'll show you pictures of that. And on the east end, it has a very, very close proximity to condominiums with residences, of course. So it is the busiest two-lane bridge in the state, about 30,000 vehicles a day. Serves much of South Portland and the region. Most of the trips come or originate or terminate in Clackamas County. It's a critical link in the trail system. You have the Greenway Corridor as well as the Springwater Corridor. It's a bridge in disrepair. It rates 2 out of 10 in terms of safety. And everybody who's worked in the project knows that the bridge that fell down in Minnesota, I-35 bridge, was rated 50. But the bridge section does a very good job of maintaining the bridge. There's a 10-ton weight restriction on the bridge, which basically eliminated bus service in 2005, and trucks and emergency vehicles as well. Emergency vehicles can use it, but only in extreme circumstances. And it has very inadequate pedestrian and bicycle facilities. Here's an example of large cracks that were found in 2003, and here's a Band-Aid, basically just putting a metal sheet and screwing it to the bridge to protect it from falling further into this repair. Also, the bridge sags. As you can see, what it ought to be, that orange line and how it's sagging, and it's very narrow. It's about 28 feet wide, and it only has 2 vehicle lanes and only pedestrian and bicycle facilities on the northern side, only 4 feet, which is grossly inadequate to meet the needs of the corridor in terms of pedestrian and bicycle access. It also is twisting. You can see there the lines should be lined up, and it's been moving over time. This is on the west side. So the needs for the project are clear, and they were developed as part of a 2-year framework working with the citizens. There's a citizen task force that develop a purpose and need for the project and establish an evaluation framework and then develop alternatives that were tested as part of an EIS process. And that ended in the publishing of an EIS report, and then there was a 45-minute comment period. Thousands of people have participated in this project, hundreds of comments, and that the committee has listened to them and has made recommendations that we have before you, as well as Planning Commission has reviewed them. And it has been voted by the project advisory group, which represented by the mayor. So the project purpose is to rehabilitate or replace the Sogo Bridge within its existing east-west corridor to provide a structurally safe bridge with connections that accommodate multimodal mobility needs. Usually these statements are pretty wordy. So basically what it means is that it must provide structural capacity for transit vehicles, trucks, emergency vehicles, and be able to withstand moderate seismic events, be able to be designed in a geometrically functional and safe manner, meet the travel demands for today and for the future, provide public transportation, improve freight access, which is restricted today, and provide improvements to pedestrian and bicycle connectivity and mobility. Among the options developed, you see the range. You know, this is just showing you the alignment. Then you had several combinations that you could do for the type of interchange on the west end, the type of intersection on the east end, as well as the cross section. So we're not going to show you a lot of details, but we're going to jump into what it was decided, but we can refer to them if you want to. Common to all the alternatives developed in the DEIS were that they were consistent with policy, and the transportation system plan, the Tacoma Main Street plan, the South Willamette River Crossing Study, the Comprehensive Plan, and the 2040 Plan, which basically to improve bicycle and pedestrian access, reinstate transit, freight, and emergency vehicles, and stabilize the West Slope. The only alternative that did not meet these goals was the no-build option, which is included in the EIS, as leave the bridge as is and do minimum maintenance improvements over time. Just to talk a little bit about the area, as I mentioned, it's very constrained. It has a lot of recreational parks and historical sites, and it's constrained on both ends. Just to mention a few, we have on the west end Riverview Cemetery, which is a historic site. And within it, there is also the superintendent's house, which is also historic. It needs access from this end of the cemetery. You have several parks, Parks Marine Park to the south of the bridge, and actually right on, underneath the bridge on the west end. And then you have the Willamette Shoreline, track, basically where you're going to have streetcar to Lake Oswego. That's the project undergoing. You have also Willamette Moorage Park, and then to the north you have Willamette Butterfly Park. And then on the west side you have Sogo Riverfront Park, Oaks Pioneer Park, and Oaks Pioneer Church, as well as the Springwater Trails and the Greenway Trail. So the elements of the LPA are five. One is whether to rehabilitate or have a new bridge. And then you have on the Western Interchange three alternatives. One was a trumpet, a free-flowing interchange that doesn't have any stops or sign, signals, for example. A roundabout option and a signalized option. On the East End, when it meets Tacoma, and the alternatives were to do nothing, leave as is, which is basically an uncontrolled intersection. A Grand Avenue extension, which is a loop that it looped around to go underneath the bridge, and I'll have a photo to explain that, or a full traffic signal at 6th Avenue. And on the in terms of alignments, you have the existing alignment, you have options to the north that bypass condos, residences directly to the north, as well as a separate pedestrian bike bridge that was proposed that would also veer north. In a cross-section, you have a variety between two and four lanes. The four lanes were two dedicated transit lanes, so just for transit, and varying pedestrian bicycle facilities, including putting pedestrians and bicyclists underneath the bridge. This is what the recommended alternative, and you have a map of that, basically. And you see how the bridge, the study area, encompasses a lot of Highway 43. That is because it requires improvements to meet all that standards and to be able to weave the two projects together. To start from the east, it calls for a pedestrian bicycle signal to provide for greater accessibility across Tacoma to the parks, to the school, without giving too much away green time for Tacoma. Tacoma has a lot of traffic, and we must give sufficient green time to Tacoma. So that's a compromise there, but I think it's workable. The alignment, basically, it is existing alignment where the bridge is today, but expanded to the south. So from 28 feet, it's going to be about 64 at its narrowest point. And on the western end, you have a signalized interchange that will provide access to the cemetery as well as to the business directly to the north, which is Steph Jennings, where they do boat repairs and sales, as well as provide transit and access in crossings over the freeway to provide for buses north and south to Lake Oswego, as well as provide pedestrian and bicycle connections to Highway 43 as well as to the trails. So West Interchange, you have three options. The first one to your left is the signalized interchange. The second one is a trumpet, free-flowing. And the third one was a roundabout. And the decision on that was to go with a signalized interchange. The reason is that it provided better bicycle pedestrian accessibility, as I mentioned. You could have cars stopped and people cross. And something that you could not do with the trumpet. The trumpet also limited access to the cemetery and to Steph Jennings, as I mentioned. It does meet traffic needs, and it provides transit connections east-west and north-south, and it provided for less of a visual impact as well as a smaller footprint, for example, than the trumpet. On the east side, you had three options, as I mentioned. On your left, you had the loop that was basically to go around to access the park as well as to Oaks Amusement Park. However, it was the analysis showed that that loop could lead to further cut-through in the neighborhood, as they may use that if you're going west, for example, in the PM peak. It's very congested across Tacoma. Then you can do a loop around, skip all that traffic, and go north, as well as the full signalized interchange that also provided you cut-through traffic in the north, in this case, in the AM, going from North Selwood, cutting through local streets, and get to 6th so that you don't have to go through Tacoma. So that's the recommendation. In terms of alignments, they were basically three. One is an existing bridge, one expanded to the south, and one that was to the north, which is you see there in the map is alternative E that bypassed condominiums altogether on north and south. There were some impacts for residents and businesses. Here you can see the difference between the two. Alternative D shows the residential impacts. Basically four units to the south in the Selwood Harbor condominiums and one to the north. And then on the alternative E below bypassed those condos, but also it affected an unoccupied building that has 6 units. On the business side, alternative D impacted 9 businesses. That's basically 48, I think that's 30 employees. that is directly under the bridge. So that's going to be taken out no matter what. And alternative E also affected that place, Grand Place, with two businesses, but also a large business park or complex with 37 businesses and over 200 employees. Also, the difference was that alternative E steered clear from the northern part of, from the southern part of the river from Park, so the river from Park, and also provided less visual impact to the Oaks Pioneer Park and the church. And that the community came in strongly in support of alternative D. So let me just skip that. The final element was a cross-section, whether to have two or three lanes, and the citizens group came split in the middle. The PDOT did further analysis to compare the two. Here's an alternative with three. But in the end, public testimony came strongly in favor of two, and that basically meets the needs of the project, and that the project advisory group agreed with that. So recommendation is 64 feet at its narrowest, with two vehicle lanes. That honors the Tacoma Main Street plan, accommodates all modes, present and future. There's no need for closure, and I can go that into a minute. It allows for minimum width for emergency response because the bike lanes can be used for vehicles to get out of the way in case of, you need an emergency vehicle, response vehicle. Accommodates future streetcar, and the provided the needs for the long term as well as the short term. In summary, the LPA does not lead to closures, which is something that the community strongly supported, especially the business community. It does provide seismic and functional sufficiency. It is a long-term solution. Has minimum right-of-way impacts, and it is a sustainable transportation solution in the sense that the alternative does not lead to more traffic in the corridor, but it offers more transportation options via bicycling, pedestrian access, transit and bicycling. So how this is going to be built once we get the funding for it, there are several schemes. One is just to build it at once. One is to build it in phases. And here you have a scheme in which you can build it, and it's kind of reflected in the map. It would be phase one and phase two. Basically, in the upper map, you see that you could build. We would build the second half, the new half of the bridge, and that while the vehicles use the existing bridge, and once that finished, you would switch the cars to the new bridge, and then you could make the old bridge be for pedestrians and bicyclists. And then when another phase would come in, for example, then you could marry the two bridges. And then as a final phase would be to reconstruct the Western Interchange. And those have the total cost of the project is about $300 million, and the cost was not a big differentiator among the alternatives. What you're adopting today is Exhibit A, the LPA, as well as Exhibit B, which includes a list of city issues that we would like to have explored as part of the further work, which is a final EIS and final design. And that would be, they're listed on Exhibit A, but to talk about them briefly would be to do a greenhouse gas emissions analysis, to have public representation and city representation as the bridge design and plans go underway, to work on funding of the bridge, find the local match, minimize impacts to the affected properties. As I mentioned, there are up to five residences affected. Resolve issues in the West Interchange. I could spend a lot of time just talking about that, and we're doing that as part of a separate process, an interchange area management plan, to build this bridge in a sustainable manner with sustainable construction practices in a way that minimizes habitat impacts, as well as to minimize impacts to parks and historic resources. So the next steps for the project are to get agency approvals, such as today. Metro Council is approving this LPA as we speak. To get agreements on mitigation, if there are things that are cannot be solved, you know, how do we mitigate for them? Amend transportation plans, including, for example, the RTP, the original transportation plan, and wait for a biological assessment, and then because as we go into final design, we'll know exactly how many piers the bridge is going to have, and that's how that affects salmon in the river, and also the Western Interchange is going to go through some diet, let's put it that way, to see if we can minimize the footprint, and that will give us the final answer as to what the impact on natural resources are. And after that comes, the logic and the sequence of approvals, and that ends in about a year from now with a record of decision. And then we'll move into the bridge, which bridge type, which we have